It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good evening and welcome back to another episode of Red Tinted Glasses here live on the Red Tinted Glasses YouTube channel. It's April Fool's Day. No, we are not joined by members of the Football Monitoring Board, but instead we're joined by Phil Mayer once again. Phil, another win for you to speak about. This is encouraging. We need to keep you back.
I know, I was about to say I'm probably arguably a bigger fool than the FMB, but yeah, no, maybe it's a good luck omen, Glenn.
Well, hopefully, and I'm sure we'll try and strive for perfection on this episode. I know Peter Leaven's continuing to do that for us in the dugout. And if we do make any mistakes, we do apologise for not being pitch perfect on here. It's the joys of doing live episodes. Where I want to speak about first on tonight's episode, Phil, is the Alan Burrows interview. Martin Davidson in the comments before we came live, asking if we'll discuss the stunning and then lol Burrows non-interview, he called it. Where to begin with that debacle, Martin says. I'll ask you, first of all, what was your thoughts on what you've seen of the interviews as we finally maybe got a bit of an insight into what's been going on as the Dons continue that search for a new manager?
Yeah, I mean, I've only really seen like a little bit on Twitter. I've not actually gone in to watch the full thing. I think I was too sort of depressed at what the outcome might be to subject myself to it. But yeah, no, I'm inclined to sort of agree. I mean, from what I've watched of it, it's very sort of PR safe, which you can't really blame him for. He wasn't going to give much away.
I guess on a club channel, you expect that, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. So it wasn't really worth looking too far into, my opinion. I mean, like I said, I agreed when he said we've got to get it right, but we're at the point now where the names that are getting pulled out the hat seem anything but right on paper, but could be proved wrong. But yeah, no, what about you?
Yeah, well, I watched the full thing last week just because I was interested to see what we had to say. And I think, you know, as fans, we've been shouting for the board, whether it be Dave Cormack, whether it be Alan Burrows, to come out and speak, you know, advise the fans on what's going on. Like, I understand and I appreciate they can't give us a minute-by-minute update. They can't update us daily and tell us who said no and who we've tried to speak to. But there was some shed of transparency in there, and I agree with Sam Gordon, where I actually have to praise Mal Pantin for some of the questions that were asked. And you know, you spoke about being PR safe, Phil, for being a club channel interview. I'm under no illusions Alan Burrows knew what questions were coming, but the fact that Mal at least asked the questions and those questions and answers were aired, for me, is an encouraging step forward in some of the club media, because I think a lot of the time, whether it be Rob McLean in a post-match interview or any of these kind of scheduled interviews that the club put out, it's too soft. So to at least see that kind of coming out is encouraging. But I mean, it's 14 minutes. Maybe a lot of us won't get back, because as Kaiser says, Burrows left us none the wiser. He kind of danced about the fact that we'd tried a couple of things and we're back to where we started. But, you know, at least kind of hearing it. And, you know, I think we spoke about before we came live tonight, Phil, that, you know, Burrows saying if we need to take our time to get the right man, then that's what we need to do. And again, that's just a little thing that the fans wanted to hear. If it's going to take time, so be it. And I think you'd like to think most of the fan base would agree with that sort of sentiment.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we've sort of said it for however many weeks, you know, since the rumour mill started, that, you know, I think the phrase that's been going around Twitter, podcast, or it might be, is the next one has to be the right one, you know. So I'd like to think that the majority is sort of in the boat of putting a little, you know, not that they've maybe merited the trust, but a little bit of trust into what the board's sort of got in mind. And yeah, hopefully this one's the one that's going to work.
Yeah, at this rate, we'll be without a permanent manager longer than Neil Warnock was in charge of the club. But at the end of the day, if it's going to take that time to make the right appointment, then so be it. That interview came out on Thursday, I think it was, and then on Friday, of course, for those on X, formerly known as Twitter, or Twitter as we just like to call it on here, Choose Your Fighter, In the No Account versus Scott Burns. The very famous or infamous, depending which way you want to look at it, Twitter account, is it Harold or Ingolfsson, basically announced that the club had agreed a deal with Michael O'Neill, sending me, you, and a lot of others into meltdown. Meltdown's maybe strong. It just feels like it would be such an uninspiring choice if we appointed him, only to be up stumped really half an hour later by Scott Burns to say that Michael O'Neill wasn't in the running for the job. So for a brief moment, the hysteria followed by the, what the hell's going on again?
Yeah, I think everyone was sort of up the high dough there. I think everyone's been itching for something, but that when something like that happens, like, everyone immediately jumps on it. There's nothing I would find funnier now, though, that if they appointed Martin O'Neill and it was just Heraldo's source was maybe just slightly off.
It's just a typo.
It was just a typo, and then they can save face. But no, yeah, that was a fun 20 minutes on a Friday evening.
Yeah, livened it up. Barry Reid saying, and obviously picking up on the point from Burrows' interviews, that he said that we were still after their number one target, so going to be interesting to see who it is. I do wonder, had we gone back in for Michael O'Neill, and I think obviously the compensation, maybe just his desire not to come here, proved to be the final stumbling block. Could we be going back in for Jimmy Thielen? Who knows? That's, I guess, the vagueness of that answer. But kind of something we discussed a little bit ahead of, obviously, the outcome of the weekend result against Ross County in the last episode. Lee Seymour goes on to ask, are you of the same opinion that because our top flight status isn't guaranteed yet, nobody wants to commit to us either way? Do you see that being a potential deciding factor for a new manager?
It could be. I don't think it'd be the biggest stumbling block, though, because I think in the grand scheme of things, I think we should be all right. You know, the gap we've got just now, there's still a potential to push top six, but, you know, I mean, we've got a lot of results to go our way. And
a lot of goal difference to swing as well.
Exactly. So, but I think probably it's more potentially the uncertainty around what's going on next season in terms of the board. You know, certain managers like certain backroom staff, there's a certain member with red hair, sorry Glenn, that seems to have hung around a few culls.
He's got about the same amount of hair as me.
But, you know, he seems to have hung around a few culls, and, you know, maybe they're wondering to him to get in all their own staff. I've got no idea. There's got to be something holding something up. I wouldn't think it'd be money outside of compensation, because, you know, Cormac could pay whatever he wanted, really. So yeah, we're never going to know. No one's ever going to come out and say. So it's all just speculation at the end of it. But it would be interesting, sort of a fly on the wall, you know, Sunderland till I die style for this season. It would have been brilliant.
Oh, could you imagine? And Pedro 73 saying, are we taking our time because people are turning it down? Of course, again, going back to Jimmy Thielen, saying that the timing wasn't right for him given the start of the Swedish season, actually just started, I think, this weekend. Most of the Scandinavian leagues started. I know Pat Pabbey-Begay, of course, kicked off his loan move, lasted 44 minutes, subbed off even before half-time after picking up a booking. So good to see things starting on the front foot for Pap over in Norway. But it could be the fact that we've had to kind of work down our list of potential candidates. But, I mean, those that maybe listened to Sportsound on Saturday after the game, heard the meltdown from Michael Stewart, should I say, and kind of the contrast in the opinion of Kevin Thompson saying, why shouldn't Aberdeen be aiming for the best out there? Why should we be settling for a Neil Lennon, Jack Ross, and whoever else Michael Stewart was nominating of a really kind of bog standard name that would be uninspiring to most of us as we look ahead to next season? But I just wonder as well, with obviously we're going to come on to speak about footballing matters just shortly, Phil, but that win on Saturday, obviously huge for us in terms of avoiding the playoff, but building towards next season and again, maybe taking that next step to appointing a manager. I said in some of the interviews I was doing with the BBC this week that personally, I would be quite happy seeing Peter Leaven remain in charge until, you know, that 11th place finish was totally out the window. Then the new man comes in and takes that time to assess the squad between now and the end of the season. Would you be of kind of similar feeling to that?
Yeah, I mean, I said last time, obviously, we're wanting to try and get someone in as soon as they can become available. But at the same time, you're wanting that continuity until we're entirely safe. You know, if we can have that little bit of stability in our lineup and our sort of tactics and how we're going about sort of the football side of things, probably makes sense until we're well clear of that relegation playoff spot.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is the hunt or the search. Who knows what we're going to call it right now for a new manager, because we're still no further forward. So I think we should get on to speak about football now, Phil. The Dons won two games in a row.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Under Peter Leaven, a 2-1 win over Ross County this weekend. Goals from, well, is it a goal from Boyan Miosky? We'll come on to that. And Jamie McGrath sealing a important win in what was a very nervy atmosphere. Again, another subject we'll come on to. Just the one change to the Dons' starting 11, Angus McDonald dropping out the matchday squad altogether, replaced by Richard Jensen in the starting lineup. No news. I've certainly not heard anything of why Angus was missing you, Phil.
No, I'm assuming injury, but normally that's communicated in one way or another.
Yeah, well, unless it was maybe illness picked up after the pre-match conference. But let's get on to the opening goal. Perfect start for Aberdeen, getting the opener inside 5 minutes. Credit Junior Hoylett. What a ball to Boyan Miovsky to find the North Macedonian. Whose goal is it, Phil?
I'm saying it's Miovsky's purely for his confidence. I mean, it's one of those things as well.
Just to make it look like we knew what we were talking about, saying he's coming back, all the guns firing.
Exactly, exactly. It was all up there. It was all up there. But no, I think it was on target. It was probably the most horrific attempt at a clearance I've ever seen in football. I don't quite know how the ball's ended up where it has, so fair play to the county defender for that. But yeah, no, I'm saying it's Miovsky's. Very loosely, like I say, just a stat pad for that extra couple of zeros when he dips off.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the bookies actually paid out on Boyan Miovsky first goal scorer, but I personally would have been giving it to Lokaina because he's managed to clear that ball from in front of the line and put it pretty much into the top corner. It's seriously impressive, and you know, more so incredible because he was absolutely under no pressure. He actually, once the ball went past the keeper, I actually kind of switched off a little bit because I thought, well, the defender's going to get back, take a touch, and then just hoof it clear. But yeah, he had other ideas. And I guess, you know, potentially the pressure of the situation both teams find themselves in, moments of madness occurring, maybe that's the finally bit of luck that we desperately needed in the league going our way in a game where, well, there was very little quality, I think it has to be said. Certainly from an Aberdeen point of view, it felt.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, it was quite funny. There was one of the women whose season ticket seats in front of me, and she'd been away on holiday. she kind of went, "Oh, what's your thoughts on Junior Hoylett?" I was like, "Oh, I was like, he's got a decent right foot. Just don't ask him to run." And that was basically all that first half was for Hoylett. Mm-hmm. Was a horrific press and then one good ball into Miowski. And it's quite funny as well, because even the offside goal, I thought the ball in from Barron was good. And mm-hmm. that was the only two occasions we did that the entire yeah. game. We just sacked it off after that and just hoofed it for 45 minutes, which I couldn't quite wrap my head around.
Yeah, it was really interesting, because you're right in the fact that, you know, we get the early goal, and we spoke about that on the last episode, how Aberdeen would approach the game. Would we come out and look to start on the front foot? I felt we did. We got that early goal, which I think as well eased a lot of the nerves and kind of anticipation, maybe, that approached this game. But then kind of maybe inexplicably, we sat back, or County got over there. Early match jitters and grew in confidence. You know, they got a string of early corners as well and allowed them to put pressure on. And ultimately, that's where the Ross County equaliser comes from. But for me, the biggest grievance about the equaliser is we just didn't learn. Every single corner in that first half, Ross County, one, took short, and secondly, pinged to the back post. And it was only a matter of time before something came off, and well, Jack McKenzie as well really doesn't cover himself in glory, kind of really loses Simon Murray at the back post. And I don't know, was it deserved at the time, the equaliser? It kind of felt like it was coming to a degree, but I don't know your thoughts.
I mean, there was just so many weird things. I'm assuming it was tactically in that first half, which I didn't quite get. Like you say, I mean, the whole lead up to the game, I was giving it the classic when you're playing Ross County, you can't get sucked into their game, we've got more quality, blah, blah, blah. And it was like polar opposites. I mean, the boys Sims and Murray just took us for a ride for the most part. I thought Sims mm-hmm. was excellent getting the ball forward. Yeah, I thought we had far too much space between our defensive line and our midfield, which really didn't allow us to have any of our quality players like Clarkson on the ball. You know, just a flat line of what was like five bodies sitting sort of in the final third and just getting it lumped up to them, which made no sense. And then, like you say, yeah, and then, like you say, the equalising goal, which kind of felt like it was coming, zonal marking is just a massive gripe of mine. I hate it with a passion. You know, this is the one thing in modern football that I just cannot get behind, really, that and XG. but it was so weird, because McKenzie was sort of like, instinctively, he was like, right, I'll keep Murray at arm's length. So he kind of stuck his arm out, and then he just seemed to buffer for a minute. Then you could see him sort of turn round and go, oh, he's not arm's length anymore. And then the ball was in the net, and I went, oh. I mean, was it McGrath or Gartman? Someone else was also zonal at the back post and just wasn't picking anyone up, and they just kind of planted there. And I was going, what has happened here? Especially a keeper like Roos, you need, you know, he's not going to come off his line, so you need somebody on, you know, you need man marking.
And again, it's another goal that we concede from a set piece that goes in. This one goes in off the post, and again, we don't have anybody on the post, although sometimes you do see at corners, you stick a man on the front post and they kind of move to the back post depending where the ball goes. But again, it seems to be a tactic this season for us that we don't put a man on the post, and I couldn't help but feel kind of probably by the third corner that County had really worked on a tactic on how to exploit us at set pieces, and we just didn't learn from it. Hopefully that's something that we're working on improving on this week in training. But I want to go back to that point that you made about kind of that midfield, and the point I've got on screen again from Sam Gordon, where he said team of individuals for large parts of the game, literally not one partnership. Kind of one thing that stood out to me was the kind of lack of leadership at times in that first half. We didn't really have anyone taking the game by the scruff of the neck, just, you know, calming ourselves down, keeping possession for 5 minutes, just making County work off the ball. We were hurried, we were hashed, we were, you know, slack passing, giving possession away cheap. Again, the likes of Connor Barron, Leighton Clarkson, maybe guilty once again, certainly in Connor Barron's case, of wanting to do too much with a ball, and as a result, giving possession away. And, you know, I get the desire and the intent where it's coming from, but yeah, and again, you know, you made the point as well, the fact we were getting balls in behind on the deck causing county problems. We just started putting in the air and it didn't work. It just seemed to be, not only did the goal panic the players, but it really panicked the crowd, because it really felt that once that goal went in, the atmosphere changed completely, didn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, the first half especially, it was like total opposites. I mean, where we had sort of, at times, I think Shinnie had to do the work of a couple bodies, because, like I say, there was just that big of a gap that when we did get out of possession, Clarkson, Barr and McGrath were all so far forward, there was nobody to stop the county counter. Whereas on the other hand, Fairhigh thought like brilliant, apart from, you know, he was at fault for our second, arguably. Victor Latourie was always there to be the spare man, always played out the press, always got county's counters going. It was a really weird first half. And then, like you say, the equaliser really did sort of suck the tension back into the stadium after it just sort of, you almost had that collective sigh of relief 5 minutes in. Mm-hmm. And you could definitely notice it feed on the pitch slightly. Mm-hmm. But they weren't really doing much to get the fans off their backs. You know, all, like you say, all we needed was a 5 minute spell, just get our foot on the ball and just sort of work around county, have like a sort of very consistent, you know, period of possession. And we just never once did that.
Yeah, they were really disciplined in their approach. And, you know, I wondered as well if the early goal would fluster them slightly. It didn't really. They stuck very much to their game plan and discipline to the approach. And if anything, as soon as they scored, obviously, understandably, grew in confidence. But we got much weaker. And the one area, again, that seemed to cause concern, not just for fans, but player-wise, Stephen Gartman, again, for me, why does he always let the ball bounce? Just go out and attack it, even when he's not even under pressure as well. He's letting it bounce. Like, he's just scared to control it.
Yeah, no, I think I'd put something up at halftime, basically saying that he has to start meeting the ball first time. I don't know if it... Because, I mean, we've noticed one of his weak points has been getting caught under the long ball. And I don't know if that's just subconsciously in his head, where he now just thinks he's got to become this Brazilian ball-playing centre-half that plucks everything out the sky and does a lot of roulette or whatever. But it's the same sort of thing that even in... we'll probably speak about in the second half, there's a bit of a wobbly one where he sort of lets the ball bounce on the half-turn, really under-hits his ball back to Ruth. And you're just thinking, just volley it, just anywhere, just kick it somewhere else. But yeah, it's... you can tell he's a bit devoid of confidence at times. But he doesn't really help himself out, does he?
No, he really doesn't. Certainly with kind of stuff like that, and when a game's so tight and has so much riding on it as well. And again, it was weird. I remember turning to my pals and saying, it feels weird that I really want us to get in 1-1 at halftime. Like, who'd have thought that in a big game against Ross County, as it kind of sums up where we've been this season. And it felt like it was going to be a bit of a tactical battle in the second half, who could get the upper hand. And I felt Don Cowie blinked first. And I don't know whether it was injury, because obviously you picked out Sims as being excellent in that first half and his direct running causing us all sorts of problems. But maybe the partnership we both expected to start from a Ross County point of view, Jordan White and Simon Murray. Up top, Jordan White comes on at the start of the second half and really provides County that kind of battering ram and target ball. And probably from a Ross County point of view, is unlucky not to put them 2-1 up early on. Kelroos very confident that his shot was going wide. It felt a lot closer from watching it from behind the goal. But we really didn't get going in the second half again. And one thing from the first half that for me kind of fed into the second half was, well, I felt it'd been a lot longer than 5 minutes into the second half, but it dawned on me very early in the second half that, yes, we'd scored, but we actually hadn't forced the Ross County goalkeeper into a save. You know, Kelroos had been the busier of the two goalkeepers. We'd been extremely uncreative, and I was actually looking at the stats before you joined the studio tonight, and we only had 4 shots on target all game. Obviously, 2 goals, and then 2 shots from distance, one being Connor Barron, which was the first save their goalkeeper had to make. That was in the 55th minute. And I want to say it was Leighton Clarkson, also from distance, and again, relatively easy for the Ross County goalkeeper to gather. Is that lack of creativity a worry, or does it just play down to the type of game that we were involved in at the weekend?
I think it somewhat is a bit of worry. Like I say, the two best chances we had in the first half, obviously one that was flagged offside, was when using Nijovski the way that he wants to be used. He wants the ball into his feet to pin a defender, or he wants the ball into a channel to run onto so he can create a chance. And we were playing like he was Jordan White, and we were just pinging balls up to him which weren't going to stick. But also at the same time, it's something that I've noticed a lot recently is we just seem to be so scared of taking a shot on. Like, I mean, even in the second half, at times, you know, McGrath or Duke or, you know, the first half, Hoylett was coming in off the left, and you're just thinking, just take one on. If you get enough power on it, it spills out. You've got the likes of Jovski in the box who thrives on, you know, scrambles like that. And then it would sort of, they'd get into the position, and then it would be like, all right, I'll turn back and play it to Shinny now. And you're just thinking, just have that little bit of belief in yourself to just try and do something. I mean, like I said earlier, it's the sort of classic thing where we had more quality on the pitch than County, but you wouldn't have thought it when you were looking at, you know, how we were playing. It looked like a team that was really just scared and devoid of all sort of creativity.
And I just wonder, though, how much that kind of plays into scared, I'll put that in inverted commas, kind of comes down to the atmosphere and the way that the attention was spilling from the crowd onto the pitch potentially. And, you know, whoever player it was didn't want to be that one that sclaffs a shot high into the RDS and when they could have squared it, because of course everybody in the stand knows what ball should have been done instead. And you just wonder, does that come into it slightly? And of course, some people say I'm being too negative because of course we won. Obviously, points matter more at this stage of the season. It wasn't pretty. The performance wasn't great, but ultimately we're speaking about 3 points. And right now, at this stage of the season, given where we were, given the importance and all the pressure, really felt like it was on us going into this game. 3 points, doesn't matter how they came, we move on.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, 3 points are the most important thing at the end of the day. But I mean, it always comes back to earlier on in the season when we've been going through our bad spell, you know, and you've got like Sashine coming out and saying, you know, we've got to do the talking on the pitch, you know, we can say all we want or whatever, but we've got to sort of prove that we should be wearing the shirt. Which, you know, in recent weeks, players have stepped up and, you know, tried to sort of bring back that feeling. But I get no one wants to be the villain in it all and, you know, get even more abuse. But yeah, like you say, at the end of the day, you've got to take the chances. I mean, like, there's very few chances in this game created. You know, we've got players like Clarkson and Nijovski and McGrath who can, you know, at the drop of a hat, change a game and create something. And, you know, arguably Duke did that when he came on. And I think we're just needing more of that going forward, because it's going to be a difficult running, you know, even if we are safe, it's going to be a tough running because the team's in the bottom six at the moment. There's some quality sides in there.
Yeah, and you've got teams literally scrapping for their lives, and it'll just be nice now for a week where maybe the focus isn't on our plight, and St Johnstone get the media limelight about being the team down there struggling. Of course, you mentioned Duke and his involvement when he came on. Peter Leaven going to his bench and making a double change, both Duke and Dante Polvara coming on to replace Connor Barron and Junior Hoylett just after the hour mark, I should say. And what a difference that seemed to make to the team. You kind of touched on Junior Hoylett's kind of energy in terms of tracking back and going forward. I guess when he's got that quality from deliveries, you can kind of let him off a little bit, but Duke certainly seemed to give us a little bit of directness that we were severely lacking. And I think for me, the biggest difference was Dante Polvara coming in and just being that scruffy ball winner in the middle of the park. As I said, in that first half, we didn't really have a leadership. We didn't have anyone taking the game by the scruff of the neck. And I felt Dante Polvara does that really well. And it kind of sums up in the second goal where, yes, it was a mistake from Victor Latourie, but Dante's there on him, winning the ball back, getting the ball wide quickly, not dilly-dallying or passing it back for someone else to then get it wide. It was that directness that those two players brought to the team ultimately lead to the second goal.
Yeah, no, and I was quite surprised Povara didn't start. To be honest, I thought it was a game that suited him more, just having that extra physicality in the middle. Just, you know, that's how Ross County play, you know, and it gave us, would have given us that extra line as well, you know, the aerial threat. But like you say, I mean, one of my favourite things about his game is how positive he is. You know, majority of games that he plays in, it's one or two touches and he's looking either for a ball into the channel or he's looking to try and get the ball into somebody's feet on the turn. And like you said, that's exactly what he did, winning the ball off Latourie and then out to McKenzie and into Duke. So yeah, a massive, massive game changer having especially him come on. But I thought Duke was back to doing what he kind of did best.
Yeah.
You know, he made those runs into the channel. He, you know, helped us with the press as well, which we were sort of missing with Hoylett. Miofsky or Clarkson were often just pressing on their own. So I think having that extra pressure on the county defence really sort of helped us get a bit more of a foothold. And yeah, it was good to see him actually, you know, pinning his defender and turning him like the Duke of old. So hopefully that's a sign of what's to come.
Absolutely. And of course, before obviously we get the second goal, we need to discuss the incident where Wickens wipes out Duke. As well, you, of course, sit in Section T, probably have a much better view of that incident than certainly myself. Because certainly at the time, I couldn't help but feel there was potentially kind of that cover, kind of, which is possibly why Kevin Clancy sees that as a booking instead of denying a clear goal-scoring opportunity. But as soon as it went to VAR, I know you and Stuart tweeted it out as well, but I spotted it straight away. The Ross County keeper was stripped, ready to go.
Yeah.
I think the Ross County bench felt a red card was inevitable. Did you think at the time it should have been a straight red?
I thought so, yeah. I mean, like I say, you can argue there was the cover player there, but, you know, Duke's flicked that ball around him. He's getting on the end of it. No one's going to deny he's getting on the end of it. And really, even if a defender gets remotely close to getting back on the line, you know, I don't think they're going to do much. And even then, I thought it was quite interesting that it was VAR checked, I think, for serious foul play, or at least that's what the LED board behind me sort of said. And then, you know, watching it back on Sports Scene, you could argue that it was serious foul play. I mean, he's jumped in the air. He's in no control at all. You know, it'd be a bit different if he just sort of came out and it was sort of like a slight body check or whatever. But the fact he sort of leapt into the air, you know, he's caught Duke sort of just above the ankle, no control whatsoever, you know, excessive force, whatever terms you're wanting to use. I'm so surprised that he's managed to stay on the pitch in that scenario.
Yeah, again, just kind of pointing, I guess, to the inconsistency we've seen throughout this season from Scottish referees and the VAR officials as well. I thought once it maybe started going to a check, it would be reversed. And as I said, I was encouraged in a sense by the fact that Ross County were getting their keeper ready. I think had he just sat on the bench, I'd have just been like, oh, well, it's just going to be a booking. Let's just get on with it. But thankfully, I guess it hasn't come back to haunt us because, of course, as we said, we do get the winner. A rainbow started to come over the RDS with about 10 minutes to go. And, you know, there was no pot of gold under it for us, but maybe that luck of the Irish rubbed off on Jamie McGrath because finally, as you say, that bit of quality that was severely lacking, in my opinion, throughout the game from an Aberdeen point of view, we got that from Duke and the cutback and the county defence were static. But all too often we've seen this season how alert Jamie McGrath can be in those situations, not sitting on his heels, you know, wanting to be proactive and getting in there and getting what is a huge goal, his 10th goal of the season. And a player, let's not forget, of course, came in under huge kind of underwhelm, has scored a lot of pivotal goals for us this season. And I was trying to find the comment from Scottish Crypto who said that McGrath's player of the season, hands down. Could Bojan Miofsky have any competition on his hands for player of the year?
No. I think that's a foregone conclusion for the most part. I've got to hold my hands up as being one of the many people when McGrath, you know, not even when he was announced, when the whole pictures were flying around of him getting his photos taken at Cormac Park. I was sort of on the underwhelming boat, but he's fairly proved me wrong. Came up when it's mattered, really, and I think that's probably the most pivotal thing about McGrath, is that not only is he providing us goals, he tends to provide goals when we really, really need them. It's been a fair pickup for us. I think he's a close second to Miofsky, though, I think, in the Player of the Year running.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who makes the top three, of course, announced at the end of April.
Is there even enough to make a top three, really?
Well, I know a lot of people have touted Jack McKenzie to be there, so it could be McKenzie, McGrath, and then Miofsky. So we'll see what comes. But again, that goal kind of greeted with a huge roar, but also a huge sense of relief, I think, more than anything, from those in the home sections. And thankfully, despite a late VAR check for a potential foul on Simon Murray at the very dying embers of the game, we saw it out pretty comfortably.
Yeah, no, I think, like I said, I think the changes and, you know, sort of having Povar in the midfield really did help that. I think, you know, Nicky Devlin binning off the face mask probably helped as well. Because I've no idea why he binned it off. But yeah, he played a bit better after that. I think it was, like you say, it was a collective sigh of relief amongst everybody. And what was a really big win.
Yeah, huge win. Of course, the win moves us 5 points clear of St Johnstone, 6 points clear of Saturday's opponents, Ross County. 10 goals is the difference to the Staggies, of course. Ross County still occupying 11th place. So for those that look at goal difference, as Phil said, you know, need to jump through hoops and whatnot to make the top six. I think goal difference scuppers us there. It could be the thing that scuppers Ross County. So you could argue 7 points the difference to 11th place right now. And of course, it is a trip to bottom basement club Livingston this weekend as the Dons look to make it 3 wins in a row. Phil, Livingston await this weekend, a venue we've not exactly done well. Well, I know you and the rest of Talk Livy will be waiting for this, so I'll get it out of the way. It's a pitch that does us no favours either. But look, it's another game which, whatever way you look at it, we need to be coming away with 3 points to ease those fears of 11th, if anyone still has them. But just to keep that confidence going in the squad, because, of course, we're 2 and a bit weeks out from the Scottish Cup semi-final, and winning games is only going to increase the squad's confidence for that game, if not the fans, because I know it's been doing the rounds tonight on social media that the ticket sales haven't exactly been going well for that game.
Yeah, no, it's a tough place to go to for multiple reasons. Like I say, with the opening game this season was just horrific to watch, but in Livy's current form, and with us having picked up correctly and 2 wins in a row this time, hopefully we're the in-confidence and sort of momentum-bearing side. And like I've kept on saying to everyone, I think Livy and Dundee are two must-wins again, not only just for the sort of cushion it'll provide, but in the run-up to the semi-final, just having that sort of wind in our sails ever so slightly. You know, Celtic picked up a good win the other day at Livingston. Didn't think they played all that great, to tell you the truth, which has kind of been the story of their season. So, you know, if they can sort of continue to mediocrely sort of pick up wins here and there or drop points, and we can sort of convincingly, I'm going to manifest, dispatch Livy and Dundee, it'll hopefully boost not only our confidence, but like you say, the sales going down to Hampden on the 20th.
Yeah, fingers crossed, of course. It's going to be an interesting one looking ahead to the weekend. You obviously mentioned that Dundee game, trying to make it kind of keep that winning momentum going, if of course we do that against Livingston, because it feels really weird that game at Pittodrie could be a top six decider, but it doesn't involve us by all sets of results potentially this weekend. But looking from an Aberdeen point of view going into this game, you mentioned Dante Polvar and your surprise at him not starting. Peter Leaven spoke pre-match in his press conference that he's got players itching for more game time, knocking at the door, but he's putting faith in those players that obviously got the win against Motherwell. Has Dante got a bigger case now after his performance to maybe barge himself ahead of the likes of Conor Barron and Leighton Clarkson going into this weekend?
Absolutely ahead of Barron, I would argue. I think Livy, I think the changes should be the same as they were. I think Hoylett out for Duke and Povaran for Barron would be my preference. But yeah, I think, you know, when Povaras came on this season when he started games as well, he's putting more sort of 8 out of 10 performances than not. So I would like to see him getting in, like I said earlier on about sort of being surprised at not starting against County. I think the sort of physical sort of bully ball style that Livy often try to play, having that extra bit of physicality and height in the midfield, Polvara, would really benefit us. And as well, his qualities to get us going forward on a pitch like that is much needed as well.
Yeah, and actually, I know we're speaking about the game coming up this weekend. We forgot to speak about Dante Polvara's effort that probably has seen the crossbar still shaking at the RDS side. What a fucking hit that was. Yeah, like, that would have ripped the net off had that gone in.
Yeah, almost felt so vindicated after banging on about how much I think he's great when he gets it at that position. He just doesn't take them on. Yeah. And then, but alas, it was not to be. But it'll come. There's a thunder bastard in him yet.
Yeah, hopefully saving that for Hampden. The musical box posed a question, or kind of point, I should say, about the Ross County game, saying he feels we could have won more easily had we played a pair of strikers. Given that, then, do you think there is a case for Duke to start this weekend, or will we continue to just go with one up top?
I think Duke will start, but whether he starts as a conventional striker and we go two up top, I don't know. I think we're kind of in this sort of three up front slash five in midfield, where the sort of wide attack midfielders sort of become wingers in the sort of attacking phase. So I can see him starting, but I don't think as a conventional striker, and I also don't see Sockler starting either, who I kind of feel a bit sorry for in a way. You know, I feel like he's not really had much opportunity as of late.
And we spoke about the defence pre-Ross County and speaking about maybe not wanting to change it too much, continue to build their confidence. Now, this comment has made me laugh. Graham Gibbs saying, please get McDonald back into the defence. I can't handle another game with the Scandinavian Spanners. Which Spanner would you drop if Angus McDonald is coming back into the team this weekend?
See, I don't even know, because as much as I think McDonald's a good defender, it's another one where I don't think he's done enough this season. I think the real player we're missing is Ruby, and I think it's because he's the no-nonsense head-out type. But I think if McDonald was to come in, I would probably say for Gartman. Jensen wasn't great the other day either, but I think just having an extra left-footed centre-half is a bit of a bonus, considering Gartman's not very good with either foot.
But then if Jensen's... he'd be left foot dominant as well. You'd have three of that back line all left footed.
No, Gartman's right footed. And so
no, I'm saying if you... Oh, McDonald, sorry. No, okay.
Am I confusing you, Glenn?
Yeah, very. I can't tell my left from my right. In that sense as well, I do think for Stefan Gartman, he is a player that is struggling right now with, as you kind of made the point about the confidence, and whether it's in his head about dealing with a long ball over the top and feels like he needs it to bounce. Again, Ewan, this is tick number two for your pitch. This is a pitch that we'll be playing on that doesn't bounce the same as grass, and things can go differently. It's also not going to be a game that, well, I actually don't know how close Ruby is back to being fit, but we always hear about injured players never being risked back onto a surface like this. So we are going to be sticking with one of Jensen, McDonald or Gartenman. What can we do to almost get his confidence back, because we could be in a place where we do need him in a few weeks, injuries or suspensions coming into place.
Yeah, I think this is sometimes where we struggle a little bit, where maybe McDonald would be good to have on with him. And I think it's, we're really missing a sort of experienced centre-half. You know, someone that could just go next to him and just really sort of coach and carry through the game. You know, not that Gartman's a sort of young chick or anything, but, you know, I think he just, in the same way as, you know, we've said before, sometimes having Shinny next to the likes of Barr in the midfield,
yeah,
and just sort of coaching, or even Hayes on the left wing when McKenzie was coming through, just having him sort of coach them through a game can do a world of wonders for just boosting that confidence ever so slightly. Like I said, a clean sheet would probably do it as well. A clean sheet without really much mistakes for us to berate him on would be ideal.
Yeah, and I'm sure a clean sheet would also boost Kyle Roos's confidence as well, because he, you know, obviously doesn't keep a clean sheet the weekend, but comes up with some big stops against Ross County. There was the effort, he tips over the bar extremely well, and then again in the dying embers, comes for a ball and claims it very well for, of course, us as a fan base, very used to seeing him static towards the line. So seeing him even grow into that sort of confidence to come out and impose himself, it's taken long enough, but at least it's come at a crucial stage. Kaiser asking, what about Jack Milne at centre-back? It's not a position we've seen him play. It's tended to be on the right back. So I can't see it being risked, but he says he couldn't be any worse, so probably agree with that as well. And Rubizic was training last week, Sam. But as I said, I just don't think you risk Rubizic, given it was a knee injury, going back onto a plastic pitch. I don't see that being a necessary risk, given we've got other options available, even if it is in the likes of Jack Milne. But this game as well, obviously, we're looking at it from an Aberdeen point of view. Livingston, 10 points behind Ross County, feeling, I'm sure, all but down but out. Is this a game we've got to be worried about, given Livingston and our records down there particularly? They could be looking to target a result to revive any hopes, given Ross County, of course, do have a tricky couple of games coming up pre-split.
Yeah, I think any time you're playing one of the teams that's, you know, really sort of tough in a relegation battle, you've got, there isn't really much room for error, because everyone's going to be up for it. And, you know, Livingston, despite not being the greatest team in the world, arguably tactically, they still have quality players on their side. I mean, you know, we've seen it when they came up to Pittodrie and nicked that goal. I think it was Guthrie, you know. They've got players that can sort of cause issues, whether it's physically or even, you know, technically in some cases, you know, like Andrew Shinney can come up with some good creative play. I think we can't go into it lightly. I think it's not disrespectful to say we should be winning it, but we're going to have to make sure we do the fundamentals right, which I think we're doing more of recently. I think it'll be what it always is. It'll be a sticky game for the first 15 minutes. Yeah. And then after that, I'm hoping we'll just be able to grow into it and sort of take a real foothold.
Yeah, and the one Livingston player I've certainly been impressed since they signed him is Tete Yangi up top. And I'm sure they'll be looking, once again, after the success kind of Ross County had in terms of playing up to a target manner and trying to turn the centre-backs, they'll be maybe looking to play on that this season. But I think you're right. I don't think it's disrespectful to say we should be going down there looking to win. You just need to look at the Talk Livy guys when they do their own predictions on their podcast for games. Ewan and Angus both predicted heavy defeats for the weekend coming, weekend past against Celtic, and I'll be listening to see what they predict for this weekend coming as well. And yeah, you could argue beware the wounded animal, but we're a team. I'm not saying we're going places, but we're a team with confidence. When wins do that, gaining momentum, even if it is trundling towards that split, but positive shoots coming out of Pittodrie, and it's just nice to be speaking about a win, and hopefully we can make it a hat-trick of wins and another positive podcast coming up next week as well.
Definitely, no, for sure. I think that's the main thing. Like you say, the 3 points, however that comes, the most important thing just now. But yeah, sort of slightly get the wins in our back a little bit before the semi-final would be ideal.
Ah, absolutely. Phil, once again, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast this evening. Able deputy as ever.
That's all right. I'm always ready for that 90th minute sub for the corner flag, Glenn.
Perfect. And thank you very much to everyone that's tuned in on this episode tonight here live on the YouTube channel. Remember to like the video, subscribe to the channel. It's free wherever you are tuning in, whether that be audio or video. Until next time, thanks very much for tuning in.
Sports Social Podcast Network.